California Chrome's new home is tailor-made in Nicholasville, Kentucky, and the hope there is that he will prove to be as great a sire as he was a racehorse. Duncan Taylor is the president of TaylorMade, and he will fill us in on all things Chrome and all the latest news from the family-run operation on this week's Thoroughbred Daily News podcast. We'll be back with Duncan after the message from TaylorMade, which also happens to be the sponsor of these podcasts.
M. Shawish has taken the lead as they come into the final 16.
The main reason we ended up trying M. Shawish on the dirt is he was just so impressive in the mornings to watch train on the dirt. And, he continually worked exceptionally well, showed us that, he was able not only to finish his work strongly, but then gallop out brilliantly. And we just felt like he had a dirt pedigree as well, being a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Thunder Gulch mare, that it wouldn't be a surprise if he ran well in the dirt. And certainly he did.
And it is M. Shawish, the winner of the Don Handicap.
This is Bill Finley, your host of the Thoroughbred Daily News podcast, and we're pleased to be joined by Duncan Taylor. TaylorMade always seems to be making news, but none quite so noteworthy as when they bought into California Chrome. Along with original owner Perry Martin, they helped engineer a Horse of the Year campaign in 2016 and will now be guiding his stallion career. Welcome, Duncan, and it's just been a few days since Chrome got going in his second career. The breeding shed opened last week, and how has he taken to his new role in the horse racing world?
Well, he's about as fast in the breeding shed as he is on the racetrack. He, we timed his first breeding, took him 51 seconds, and he acted like he'd been doing it his whole life. So we were very blessed that he took to it so easily. And I think it was February 12th, he bred his first mare, and he's bred about 10 now, and is doing everything like an old pro. So we're off and running.
Well, we'll see what happens, but that certainly sounds like good news and a way to start things off. Duncan, he was different than most horses because of the Pegasus World Cup, where he was racing in late January. And then almost literally the day later, getting ready for being bred. So normally horses do have a letdown period in between racing and breeding. But in his case, like I said, he went right from the track to the breeding shed. What problems, if any, did that cause? And did you have to handle him differently from some other stallions you've had over the years?
Not really. I mean, there was plenty of time, but there wasn't time for any missteps. But most horses, it'll take breeding a test mare two or three, four times, and maybe for 3 days in a row, you might do it just to get them to be, know what they're doing and accomplished and know what it's all about when they get up there. A lot of times, they're jumping all over the mare we have really good stallion crew that's been through it before. So when you have people that have the experience and know how to handle them, it even makes the, like anything that you have experienced people doing it, it makes it go a lot smoother. So, he was better than most, but, it was concerning coming in, but it wasn't as big as a obstacle as most people might think.
And just sort of on the same vein, when a horse comes off the track, again, this is a new routine to them, something they've never experienced before. And oftentimes it takes a while before they can get used to being in a paddock alone. So how has he adapted to that? And just kind of take us through what is his daily routine now?
He's basically... he went outside right away when he got back here. I mean, we checked him out good and x-rayed him to make sure that everything was all right. And he didn't have any problems. He's been amazingly sound. So he went out, and anytime you turn a horse out into a area that it's not used to being in, we give him a little tranquilizer, and we have the handler walk the horse around the paddock and show them everything several times while they're holding on to them and leading them. And after a horse has an amazing memory of what he's seen, and once he's seen everything and knows where the border lines of the fence are, knows where the water is, knows if there's any trees in his paddock, he's seen those. He's not as likely to hurt himself. And, you know, we've not always been able to have, growing up, the facilities that we have now. So when we were young, we were down at my granddad's farm, we learned that because we had wire fences and sometimes barbed wire and stuff like that. So that was a really significant endeavor then, because there were so many things for them to get hurt on, and making sure they knew exactly where they were is a tool of horsemanship that's an important one, because, you know, if horses don't know their environment, that's when they're more likely to get spooked. And people have been around horses. You notice, just like before it storms and these trees start moving and stuff like that, horses get high, and a lot of times they'll breathe real deep and snort, and that's they're trying to smell for, like, pheromones. That's how they find out if there's anything in their environment that's different or that's dangerous, and they're protecting themselves from that. So, yeah, when their environment changes, they can get a little rambunctious and hurt themselves. So you want to take every precaution, and we did that. And after that, it was fine. And he'd actually, you know, he went back in the same stall, the same pen, the same paddock. The way our stallion facility is designed, the stall door opens up and he goes into a pen right behind his stall, and that's probably 100 feet diameter, that pen is, and then there's a gate on that goes into his paddock. So he's never not in an enclosure that he's used to, except when he goes out and walks up to the breeding shed. So he'd been there before, and when he was here, Taylor made a couple times before and been in the same environment, so I'm sure he knew something about it.
Well, you just taught me something that's all new and very interesting to me. Duncan, the price his stud fee is $40,000, which for all this horse accomplished on the racetrack seems to be very fair, but you find out if it works or doesn't work to how the breeders in the market react to it. So far, what has been the reaction, and does it look like you hit the right number at $40,000?
Yeah, I think we could have studied maybe for a little more, but, you know, that won't be known until after the 4-year test, because we got 4 years to go before we'll know whether the horses are running or not, and really 5. So, yeah, there's plenty of people wanting to breed to him, and he's at like 140 mares right now. We've turned down, I don't know exactly how many, but I'm sure it's at least that 140 or more. And we're ideally looking at 150, and the remaining spots we want to be really top quality mares.
Well, that sounds, again, like very good news for TaylorMade and the whole California Chrome team. And Duncan, it's well known that no matter how good a horse may have been on the racetrack, a lot of people are reluctant to breed to them when they themselves are not by top sires. Lucky Pulpit, who passed away just a few days ago, is done fine, but he's not Tappet, as we know. He's not a Galileo. So have you seen this prejudice enter into the equation at all? Does California Chrome's own pedigree seem to be holding him back with the potential customers at all?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, if he was, if he'd had a horse like that, that would have been by Uncle Mo or Tappet, you know, I think we'd have been talking about, $80,000 to $100,000 stud fee, and you would have had everybody in the, everybody that owned a mare would want to breed to him. Mm-hmm. I think that, So it, yeah, you know, we've been very blessed with horses like Chrome. I mean, Tiznow's one was by C's Tizzy when he came, and people were, you know, can he be a stallion? And he's turned out good. And I think this horse really has a lot of the same genetics as Seattle Slough. And he wasn't by like a, any brilliant stallion. He was a $17,000 yearling, and he did tremendous as a stallion. He's made a really big imprint on the breed. So I think that, you know, there's no guarantees in this business, but we're very excited about the stallion career and what he might do for the breed. And I think that he has a he's line bred to one of Ogden Phipps's best broodmare, maybe his best broodmare ever, the Dam of Private Account Dance Number, and she was a champion 2-year-old herself. Her name's Number to Count. And I think that he's got the genetics to make a great stallion. And but I think there definitely is, back to your question, there is some prejudice. You know, that it's just only human nature. If you have the best looking pair of blue jeans in the world on, and it has Jordache or whatever the best, I don't even know what the best brand name blue jean is, it's going to be cooler than if it says some other brand that people don't know. So that's what I always consider the sire of the racehorse, is he's you either have a strong brand or you don't. And we have great genetics, but our sire brand is not well known.
Well, we'll find out, as you said, when these Chromies hit the racetrack in a handful of years, and then all these questions will be answered. We'll have a lot more to discuss with Duncan Taylor, all things California Chrome, and the other top stallions at TaylorMade after return from this message.
M. Shawish has taken the lead as they come into the final 16th.
The main reason we ended up trying M. Shawish on the dirt is he was just so impressive in the mornings to watch train on the dirt. And, you know, he continually worked exceptionally well, showed us that, you know, he was able not only to finish his work strongly, but then gallop out brilliantly. And you know, we just felt like he had a dirt pedigree as well, being a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Thunder Gulch mare, that it, you know, wouldn't be a surprise if he ran well in the dirt. And certainly he did.
And it is M. Shawish, the winner of the Don Handicap.
California Chrome is losing ground. California Chrome not gaining. He's back wide and racing in fifth. Shaman Ghost splits horses for Jose Ortiz, and they're into the stretch. And it's the Breeders' Cup winner. It's Arrogate in front, leading by three with an eighth of a mile to go. Shaman Ghost is trying to get into second. Then Neolithic. Back fourth is Noble Bird, followed by Keen Ice. But what a race! What a sport! What a horse! Arrogate romps in the Pegasus!
Now, Duncan, it probably wasn't a lot of fun for you to listen to that, as California Chrome's career did not end the way you would have hoped, as he was well beaten in the Pegasus World Cup. But you and I have talked at times about how much the post position. He drew post 12 in a mile and eighth race at Gulfstream, and Arrogate, who obviously is a great horse, he could have perhaps won from post 108. You never know. But he had post 1. And could you reflect on that and the race itself? How much do you think, first of all, that position really did hurt him?
Well, I think that I was naive to think that California Chrome could start in that position and beat the bias of no horse winning from there in 3 years. I think it's been 18 or 19 races that have been run. And, you know, I went back and looked at the facts after the race, and us against Arrogate, the time before, Arrogate improved from his time before by 29 lengths over us. The horse that was the 11 horse finished dead last in the race. We finished ninth. The horse to the inside of him, Breaking Lucky, he tried to go to the lead like we did and get position. He had beat Shaman Ghost by 3 3/4 lengths the race before, and Shaman Ghost beat him by 21 3/4 lengths in the race. And Breaking Lucky had beat Noble Bird by 14 3/4 lengths and Noble Bird beat Breaking Lucky by over 10 lengths. So that was a 25-length reversal. So to me, you know, with those statistics, there was a 20-length to 25-length disadvantage for a horse running on the outside. And that's a shame that we couldn't get a true race between us and Arrogate, because, you know, if we would have had the best post position, that would have taken one of Chrome's top performances to equal that. And he might not been able to equal it, because Arrogate is a special horse. So I'm not saying that, you know, that we would have beat Arrogate, because Arrogate's one hell of a horse. But I don't think, if you look at all the other horses in the race and who they were and how they performed, that they should have performed against California Chrome like they were. And I'm not saying that all the other horses are bad. I mean, there's some good horses in the race. But whatever happened, whether it was the post position or a bad day for Breaking Lucky and California Chrome, that could have been it. But I tend to think that Chrome was acting well. Art was saying he was training as good as he ever trained. And, you know, I would ask people just to go back and look at the track and look how the track is actually groomed and watered down from the seven hole out in the pictures at prior to the race. And I think that you will see that that the outside of that track, whether it was from the post position or lack of water, it didn't look as the same as the inside of that track. So I think the post position had a lot to do with it. I think Arrogate's a great horse, and I think it was a fun day, and it was a success. But I wish we could have been on better terms and seen what would have happened. But that's, I've had a lot of good luck in horse racing, and California Chrome's been a blessing. So I'm not crying over spilt milk. I think that I didn't analyze all the races we won nearly as hard as I analyzed the ones we lost. So, so that's just how horse racing is. And congratulations to all the people that did well. 'Cause it's a, I'm competitive, but hey, I'm glad we had a big day, and I'm glad they did well.
Yeah, and I'll just add to what you were saying. Since Gulfstream was reconfigured 8-9 years ago or whatever, only one horse in history has won a mile and eighth race on the dirt from the 12 post, and that was Big Brown in his Florida Derby. And obviously, he was also a very special horse, and there was no Arrogate in that race for him to run against. So I don't think, I agree with you, Duncan, I don't think the post position bias can be overplayed. It's huge there. So now, another interesting thing about the Pegasus is that it is going to change so much about racing with that $12 million pot out there. And again, you know, talking to you for just reporting and going back and forth, you said that you are open to the idea of, after the breeding season, putting Chrome back in training, as he would have a chance to run not only in the $12 million Pegasus, but the $5 million Breeders' Cup Classic. And where do things stand with that as we speak?
That doesn't look like it's going to happen. Again, I'll never say never, but right now that doesn't look like it's going to happen. But it is enticing, and it is still a very minimalistic possibility.
Okay. And Duncan, when it comes to that kind of decision to bring him back, and even, I know you were also talking perhaps about, you know, he can make so much money racing that you would campaign him a full year in 2017. I know you also, that door's been closed, but you did keep that open a crack as well. And when it comes to making those sort of decisions about Chrome the racehorse or Chrome the stallion, with Perry Martin involved and the partnership, who has the ultimate say in these things? Does Perry have the final decision? Does TaylorMade have the final decision? Do you guys all just sit down in a room and talk things out and come up with a democratic decision to these things?
We had the right to retire at the end of this year. We leaned heavily on what Perry thought, and Perry was definitely an advocate of going ahead and retiring him. And when he thought that's what we should do, then we said, yeah, well, that makes sense. You know, there's so much opinion and social media, and when people are very interested in something, which thank God we have an athlete in the horse business that they are, there's hardly, if you do anything outside of the box, you stand being criticized for doing it. And, you know, if you run him, they say you run him too much. If you don't run him, some people say, well, it's not good for the sport, you didn't run him. So the more conventional thing was to go ahead and retire him and breed him in his, you know, so that's what we opted to go ahead and do. But, you know, we listen to everybody's voice, and like I say, if it came down to it and we wanted to retire him, we had the right to do that.
Well, Chrome was one of the most popular horses of his era, and his fans even have a nickname now, the Chromies. They're legendary. And are you already hearing from them? Have you opened your gates to all the tourists yet? And if not, when they do come knocking on your door, how are you prepared to deal with all the popularity of this horse and you know, literally thousands of people that are going to want to come see him?
Yeah, well, I think we're ready. We've been we started Horse Country, which anybody didn't know what Horse Country is. That's the group of 35 farms and a couple of veterinarian clinics and feed companies have gone together to sort of show the behind the scenes of the horse business in Kentucky. And last year we had over 2,000 people come to the farm to visit that were booked through Horse Country. And so that gave us some practice, and I think that we're gearing up for that. There was 150,000 people that visited Maker's Mark Distillery in Loretta, Kentucky in 2016. So that shows you what this horse country mm-hmm. has the potential to grow into. So we're building a gift shop, and we're building a little barn grill to go with it, and going to accept our customers at this visitor center, and so we're not there yet, but hopefully we'll have the bar and grill. We're going to call that Daddy Joe's. That's mm-hmm. was my father's name, so we thought that would be good to call it that, and it's going to open up probably middle of April. So we're looking forward to be able to entertain people there and try to make them, you know, really have a good visit, enjoy themselves while they're getting to see behind the scenes of the horse business, which we think is, you know, really going to be well accepted, and the beauty and the inspiration of the horse and just how they're taken care of. And I think it'll do a lot of good for the industry. People will see how well the horses are taken care of and how, you know, that people that own horses do love horses and they don't mistreat them, and they're not a bunch of rich guys that are just thinking about the money and not taking care of the horse.
Right. Duncan, one of the ironies of the Arrogate and California Chrome wars in the Breeders' Cup and Pegasus World Cup is that Arrogate is by Unbridled Song. Unbridled Song is the greatest stallion that TaylorMade has ever stood. Now, he's no longer alive, so there's no economic benefit from Arrogate's victory for the farm. But in some respects, the fact that you also have this connection to Arrogate, did that ease the pain of seeing him beat Chrome at all?
No.
Okay. All right.
No, I you know, I love Unbridled Song, and as a matter of fact, I was a little more irritated than I'd probably been if it was another horse, because I'd been cheering so hard so often for him to get a horse that can go a mile and a quarter efficiently and easily and do what Arrogate's done. And then it comes along at a time, which I never imagined that TaylorMade, my brothers and I, would have a horse like California Chrome. And he has to come along right at that time. It's mm-hmm. sort of like a, a bittersweet. I look up at the good Lord and say, "You really have a good sense of humor. You answered our prayers, but you answered them at the wrong time."
Sure. Well, after Unbridled Song died in 2013, it was kind of a quiet time for TaylorMade, at least from the Stallion aspect of it. But now, all of a sudden, you've retired two major stallions in California Chrome and Mischewish to the Farm, along with Not This Time. So is that by design at all, or is this just how things fell into place?
No, I think it's just how things fell into place. I think that, we were concerned about it, that we didn't have a stallion or a young one coming up. And it's the stallion business is a very tough business, and we're competing against mostly billionaires. And it's, you know, it's hard for us to outbid them and to get stallions, so that we feel very fortunate that we have, you know, not This Time and Mischewish and California Chrome and even Protonico, which is another son of Giants Causeway that is a grade two stakes winners on the nice horse. So we got four of them this year starting out. So it gives us a lot to look forward to and a lot to work hard at and to try to make good things happen. So our team's fired up and full of enthusiasm and looking to the future. So that's a great thing.
After this message, there's a lot more to come with Duncan Taylor on this week's Thoroughbred Daily News Podcast.
Mischewish has taken the lead as they come into the final 16th.
The main reason we ended up trying Mischewish on the dirt is he was just so impressive in the mornings to watch train on the dirt. And, he continually worked exceptionally well, showed us that, he was able not only to finish his work strongly, but then gallop out brilliantly. And we just felt like he had a dirt pedigree as well, being a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Thunder Gulch mare, that it wouldn't be a surprise if he ran well in the dirt. And certainly he did.
And it is Mischewish, the winner of the Don Handicap. It is valid in front at the top of the stretch. Financial Modeling second and cutting the corner. Mischewish is closing on the outside. Mexicoma's fourth. A lot of work to do for Keen Ice. And on the far outside, it's a knockout trying to get going late. Mischewish has taken the lead as they come into the final 16th. And it is Mischewish coming to the wire, the winner of the Don Handicap.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, it's not just California Chrome. It's Mischewish as well, and some of the other horses that Duncan mentioned that are now standing at TaylorMade. And Mischewish is a very fascinating stallion prospect. And Duncan, we just heard him winning the Don Handicap, and the significance of that, of course, is that was a dirt race. Prior to that, he would have been perceived pretty much just as a turf horse. Turf horses are not normally the most prominent or popular stallions, at least in this country. So how much is that a selling point, that not only is he a grade one winner, but he's a winner on both surfaces and he is a dirt horse as well?
Yeah, I think that that he is a very well-balanced, good-looking horse, and I think he is a dirt horse. I mean, he Medaglia d'Oro was a dirt horse. Thunder Gulch, of course, he's been a great broodmare sire, and he won the Kentucky Derby. And I think that this horse, you know, people like what they know. And one thing that I think is hurting this horse is his name. So I just tell everybody to call him Wish, because he's an American bred dirt horse that could run on the grass, and he never was tried on the dirt until he was older. Who knows what he was done? I mean, he was a good 3-year-old. He was stakes placed on the grass in France, and he actually was a good grass horse. I mean, he was competing at the high levels over there in Europe and performing well. And I think that if people, when they come look at him, you know, his second dam is by Stormcat, and the third dam is by Seeking the Gold. So, you know, you don't get much more dirt than that. So he was a speed horse. A lot of times, too, what I would like to say about him that I think people need to take a second look at, a lot of times when they hear grass and they hear older, they think plotter. But some of the best handicappers talk about Emshewish's great turn of foot. So I think he's a little bit under-recognized on our stallion roster, and I think that he has a really good chance of being a top stallion. I mean, I think we just too bad we don't know what he would have done as a 2 and 3 year old if he'd have been left in this country and had been trained here and tried on the dirt, because he sure has the pedigree to have performed well on the dirt at those ages. And when he was given the opportunity, I mean, it was shown that he was a very high class dirt horse, not just a dirt horse, but a very high class dirt horse.
So are you finding that even with that Don win, and it wasn't just a grade one win on the dirt, it's a very impressive performance. Are you finding that he still has a little bit of a reputation of a turf horse that people are clinging to?
Well, I didn't really think so, but to be honest, we were not getting as many bookings as quickly as we thought we would. And we were asking around at the January and February sales, and I think we did the horse an injustice because we didn't realize that people didn't know that much about him. And I think that goes with the name. You know, people, when they see a name like that, sometimes it's just a stumbling block. They already have the horse categorized at where they think what they think is reality, which isn't reality. The reality is he's a good dirt horse, and he's an American-bred horse. He's not a foreign horse. And so I think that, you know, that's one of the things we're trying to do in our marketing right now, is saying, hey, he ran a 134 mile and the Howl's Hope, and he's won the Don, and he's a good dirt horse. He only started four times on the dirt and was very good. So I think that people are going to start realizing that we just need to do a better job of letting people know exactly what he is, because he's a he's a great horse, and we're lucky to have him.
Duncan, you run the TaylorMade operation with your three brothers and Pat Payne, and you once said that as kids, there was no lying around watching TV, that your father had you working all the time, and there's, I guess he was quite a taskmaster. And when it comes to life in general and, you know, making TaylorMade a success, how valuable were those lessons in life to you and your brothers?
You know, I often think now that that looking back at that, you know, how what I enjoy in my life is actually working and looking at trying to set goals and trying to reach them and make things work. That's what I get my joy out of. And I think that that's a real blessing. I mean, it's something that's good for your family. Maybe to be honest, might be too focused on that at times. You know, I also look at life and think, you know, that I won the lottery the day I was born, because there's so many kids that aren't born to parents that will teach them lessons like that. And, you know, when you're some of these children are being born nowadays, and the situations they're being born into, they've got a hard struggle. So we're blessed, and we know we were blessed with the parents we have, you know, you could take away all the material things we have, but you can't take away the lessons they taught us, and that's probably the most important thing we have.
Now, your own kids are now getting involved in the business, so the next generation of the Taylor family is coming around, and are you as tough and as demanding with them as your father was with you guys?
You know, I would say that we were demanding, a lot more demanding than their friends' parents were, but as demanding as he was on us, I don't think so. But they might say something different, but but I don't think we were quite that demanding. I think everything's relative. I always say, you know, that's when they say getting to the top's hard, but staying there is even harder. I think it all goes along with human nature. You know, you can tend to ease up or get comfortable, and that's always the they say the enemy of good is, or the enemy of great is good. You know, you're happy with being good. You're not striving to be great. So, so we talk about that, and I think that we're blessed to have them because, as you know, I'm 60 years old now, and you look around and you see the enthusiasm and the work ethic that they have. I think we're we've got some really good next generation and other talent, not just the Taylors, but there's other young talent within our organization that that are enthused and working hard and see our vision and our core values, and they're carrying them on and improving on them. So we're blessed in that way.
And Duncan, as you mentioned earlier, you're competing against, you use the word billionaires, and some of your competition in the stallion world now, it's almost like become corporations. I mean, you know, they're almost like the IBMs or Apples or something like that of the world. They're so big and they're so corporate. And now here you guys are, you're not the little guy because, you know, you have great stallions and you guys do very well. But the difference is this is family. This is family that goes back many generations. How proud of that aspect of the TaylorMade success are you that, you know, it's just always been the Taylors and, you know, you're not corporate, you're not IBM, you're just a bunch of guys that work hard and, you know, one family that has done very well.
Yeah, we're proud of that, but, you know, it takes other people, and we've been blessed with people like Aaron and Marie Jones and many others that have invested in our stallions and helped us along the way. And we could have never done what we've done without them. So, I mean, you know, even Kenny Trout that owns Windstar and B-Wayne Hughes that owns Spendthrift. And those guys are good friends of ours, and they've helped us along the way. So it's a we're proud of being family, but we do realize that that we haven't done it all on our own, and without people like them, we wouldn't be where we are today.
You had an interesting comment, and I thought it was, boy, it's something you could put on a T-shirt or something, and I don't remember the exact words, but talked about, you know, being good isn't good enough. You want to be great at what you do. So, you know, TaylorMade has accomplished so much in the industry, and, you know, the whole California Chrome aspect of it is just another chapter in the TaylorMade story. So what's left? What else do you want to achieve? What are your goals for the future for your operation?
You know, we want to, we would like to, if the opportunity arises, to be more global and to take advantage of all the technologies that come out in helping sell horses. We're not just sort of sitting back and saying we've got the secret sauce that's going to last forever. We got to keep tweaking and moving forward and trying to get better and using all the tools that that come about to keep us relevant within within the selling of horses. We want to be the best at, as we were selling anything, not just the best in the horse business, but if we were selling anything, that's how good we want to be. So that's sort of our vision, and as time, if the right situations to try to grow our brand to a more global brand.
Well, very interesting stuff. And Duncan, first of all, thank you so much for one thing, for helping us make the podcast series, which I know have gone over very well with the TDN brand and the TDN readers and audience. Thank you so much for making that possible. Thanks for spending some time with us today. Best of luck with California Chrome, Miss Your Wish, and all your other stallions. And we'll see you guys in the winner's circle.
I appreciate TDN. I appreciate the podcast. You guys keep up the good work.
Thank you, Duncan.